right, back out of here. Just drop it again. Another power pill. Okay, Simone Boyce from KTLA 5 Morning News. Look at Cheetah Grad back on the show.
Oh my God, to have you here, Cheetah. Happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Also on the Adam Carolla podcast, of course, and Brett Ehrlich of Brett Ehrlich fame.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to read two quick tweets, and then Brett's got some amazing stories for you guys. Cultural Groucho Marxism says, I'm in favor of giving the homeless guns, but if you give them guns, you got to give them ammo. They also need some place to store it, so give them gun safes. Mm. Well, you need some place to put the gun safe, so give them a house. Now let's just skip the first three steps for a good plan.
That was great.
That was a good.
Thanks for the 240 characters, so we can get that joke in.
I know, right? That was, and he set it all the way up. And Dancing Queen says, great point, Cenk. For the first time, the students' names are more known than the shooter's name. Yes. And members of the day are Adrian Delgado and Sarah Householder. Well, lucky for them, they were members of the day yesterday too. So it's a double members of the day. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member, get any part of the show that you might have missed, get all of our shows, get them all ad free. And I wanted to just point out, Anna was in the first hour. Don't miss her on Monday when we're going to carry Bernie Sanders' town hall on income inequality, and Anna will be part of the program.
Nice.
So check that out at 7 o'clock Eastern, facebook.com/TheYoungTurks. It'll also be on YouTube and at tytnetwork.com/live as well. Okay? All right. Brett, what do you got for
that
us?
That is a lineup and a half. All right. So, yesterday, there was the national walkout to memorialize those who were victims of the shooting in Parkland and also to protest gun violence. One of the parents of a student in Arkansas who participated in the walkout tweeted this. Her name is Jerusalem Greer. She said, my kid and two other students walked out of their rural, very conservative public school for 17 minutes today. They were given two punishment options. They chose corporal punishment. This generation is not playing around. Hashtag walkout. Corporal punishment is still a thing in schools. It's outlawed in, I think it is 31. It is 31 states. It's still okay in 19 states, per the Washington Post as recently. I think that's a stat from a few years ago. But they're called SWATs. That's the program that he was administered, SWATs on the thigh with a paddle.
Oh my God.
Here is the description of the policy. According to Greenbrier Public Schools official policy, the school board authorizes the use of corporal punishment to be administered in accordance with this policy by the superintendent or his/her designated staff members who are required to have a state issued license as a condition of their employment. It's still a thing, corporal punishment.
Do we know how old these students are? They high school. They're high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
High school kids. The image of a high school student getting slapped, or swatted, it's just mind-boggling to me.
And allowing themselves,
right?
I wonder what the other option was.
The other option was a 2-day in-school suspension. So he's just like, all right, let's get it over with.
They're hardcore, man.
Yeah. No, the students were, first of all, they're wonderfully brave. He was the first one to walk out. This particular guy, let me give you his name.
Wiley A. Greer,
right? So Wiley walks out and he said when he stood up to walk out at 10 a.m., there was gasps in the classroom and everybody was looking at him like, what are you doing? Because look, in our bubble, in a big city like L.A., a lot of people are liberal. Walking out, if you don't walk out, people look at you kind of funny like, what, you want guns in school? What are you, a weirdo, right? But over there, walking out is a huge sign of courage. And he said he went out and then he sat on the park bench in front of the school and he's like, is anybody gonna join me? And then he said, finally, two other kids came out and he said they were the two smartest kids in the school. That was my favorite part of the story.
Yeah. I also loved that student said that he was confounded by the fact that his school's administrators would meet a protest for gun violence with more violence. Corporal punishment.
Well said.
That's just it, and not my words, but his. But I just thought that was very powerful.
Yeah, Wiley, so great, man. So because He could have taken the in-school suspension. Now, look, if I'm keeping it real, I'd much rather take the SWATs than the 2 days of in-school suspension, which is like solitary confinement. You lose your mind in there, but and I have a high threshold for pain. But okay, of course they shouldn't have corporal punishment. We shouldn't be swatting people with a paddle. And like, luckily there are some rules and regulations, and so there has to be another adult present. Which that was the main thing I was looking for. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on with this paddling? I want to make sure that everybody's safe here. But he said he took the punishment to make a point about the violence, right? It wasn't just that he preferred the swatting. He says, no, corporal punishment shouldn't exist in the schools. And I took it to make the point that Simone referred to.
Well, and don't you think it's so hypocritical and, I don't know, backwards of any school that's trying to teach kids how to think critically and won't allow them to do something that's part of the national conversation? And that's what a lot of parents think, and I back them up when it's like, if I had a kid that age, I would say, stand up for what you believe in, but you better be able to defend it. Don't just do it because your friends are doing it, do it because you understand why you're doing it. And isn't that what school's for, question mark?
It's just so weird that what that moment has to be like when you're in the principal's office. And you're like in trouble.
Right.
And someone comes out with a paddle.
Right.
And the idea that like, yeah, I understand the impulse to have two people around. But like, that means that there's someone in this room where a kid's getting beaten.
Yeah.
Just to watch.
Yeah. Who can tell the woman's story?
Who
volunteered for that?
You're
paddling the students. Right, man, I'll be the witness.
The other regulation is it can't be excessive. Again. Paddle, and then it can't be done with any malice. You're hitting a kid on the thigh. Yeah, the key said it ended up not hurting. The principal, the quote in his statement, the principal was like, it's not always like that. And you can't tell the principal was like, don't worry, you know, sometimes it hurts more, be thankful, or like, it's supposed to hurt more. I wish I could do it again, but I can't act with malice.
Was the principal being kind of like wink wink? I got you. I'm on your side. Tap.
We can't tell. But that was my reading of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, to be fair to the principal, Wiley said in his letter that he respected the adults. They did nothing wrong, and they're put in this awkward situation where the principal has to come out and tell the kids when they're doing the walkout, do you understand the consequence of your actions? And explain that, you know, you're going to get beat for this or swatted for this. But I got the sense from Wiley's letter that the principal was like, okay. But the next time it might actually hurt, right?
And even if the principal wasn't that way, it is a great way to defang what might seem like a criticism of him, which is like he just doesn't like his principal. He's like, the principal was acting completely in accordance with what it was. We were all professionals there. Meanwhile, I'm 16. Or however old he is.
He had so much grace in his letter that he wrote towards the school officials. And not to minimize what Wiley and all these other students have done, because it's so courageous and brave. But when you look back through history and the way that students have changed the course of history through walkouts and marches and protests, the consequences that students today are facing are different, markedly different from what they faced, you know, when the KKK might have targeted you, when you were marching in your school and trying to, you know, fight for desegregation or integration in the school. So that's, again, not to minimize what these students have done, but just to show how powerful these statements can be and how much change they can really affect when you look back through time.
And of course, probably the most famous instance of fighting against segregation was in Arkansas as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, a long way.
Some things don't change very much, do they?
Yeah. All right. What else we got?
Okay. University of Pennsylvania law professor has been punished for her statements about black students. She said originally penned an op-ed which drew some controversy. She went on a radio or she Skyped into a talk show to kind of clarify her remarks. Here is what she said.
I don't think I've ever seen a black student graduate in the top quarter of the class, and rarely in the top half. I can think of one or two students who've scored in the top half in my required first year course. Well, what are we supposed to do about that? That you're really, you're putting in front of this person a real uphill battle. And if they were better matched, it might be a better environment for them. That's the mismatch hypothesis, of course. We're not saying they shouldn't go to college. We're not saying that.
Do you have
some of them should? Some of them shouldn't.
Do you have a racial diversity mandate for law review appointments at Penn?
Yes. Yes.
So you're telling me that students of color who have served on law review are pretty much in the bottom half of their law classes at Penn?
I would have to what I know. I mean, I haven't done a survey. I haven't done a systematic study. I'm talking about who gets the honor. I have a big, I have a class of 89, 95 students every year. So I see a big chunk of students every year. And I'm going on that because a lot of this data is, of course, a closely guarded secret, as you can imagine.
Sure.
So what was the fallout of that? According to the Washington Post, Amy Wax, the tenured professor in question, will continue to teach electives in her areas of expertise, but will be removed from teaching first year curriculum courses, implying she will no longer be teaching required courses for all students to take.
This kind of confuses me because, you know, what she said might suck. But first of all, whatever stats, because I think she provided some stats in the story that they were trying to figure out whether they were correct or not. If she's just providing stats, what's the is she, are we shooting the messenger?
No. So that's a great question because I actually in the beginning thought the same thing. When I remember reading the headline yesterday, actually going, well, it totally depends. So it depends on if she's saying, look, I think that. That African American students are not finishing the top half of the class, and I think we should find ways to fix that.
Right.
And, right.
Exactly.
And so here is some of the issues, and here's maybe more help we can get, not just necessarily even for African American students, but from students who came from a poor socioeconomic background who have some catching up to do, rather to the kids who went to private schools, et cetera, et cetera. So I was really looking forward to reading to see which one it is. But Gina, in her case, it doesn't look like that's the direction she went. So let me explain why. First of all, let's note the irony. She's still going to teach classes in her area of expertise, which is social welfare law and policy. Okay, I'm not sure that now that I've read totally into her background, I'm not sure she cares a lot about that. Or if she does, she's got a curious way of showing it. So she said that. And by the way, another comment that could start out as an interesting topic, especially in a campus, to have a discussion around. She said all cultures are not equal. I actually agree with that, and we've talked a lot about on this show. But if you mean actual cultures and portions of cultures, as opposed to races, right? And now, to be fair to her, and we'll see if you think this is fair or not, because I'm just going to quote her. She says that there's problems with cultures of some working class whites. Rap culture of inner city blacks and anti-assimilation ideas among Hispanic immigrants that are destructive to American democracy. And now, so it seems like she's got an issue with poor people overall, okay? And in fact, she says that we should return to the 1950s posture, this is a quote, 1950s posture of celebrating bourgeois culture.
Yeah.
So, and she said that over and over again. She's like, bourgeois culture is great. Like, okay, but can we give poor folks an opportunity to reach it? Right? So that's a different conversation, but she didn't leave it at that. She also talked about how academics, the media, and Hollywood have to, quote, relinquish multicultural grievance polemics. So, meaning like, oh, the minorities that are complaining should basically shut up about it. And she went on to say that, that, every quote, everyone wants to go to countries ruled by white Europeans. And quote, I don't shrink from the word superior. So when you say you're for supremacy, you can't blame people for saying you're for supremacy. There's a different word for that too. It's called racist. So now racist is a super loaded word. I wish she was a more nuanced intellectual that could engage in an interesting conversation rather than white people are awesome, don't you want to go to their countries and they're superior to you?
And there are more nuanced intellectuals and academics who have pointed to the racial disparities in law school outcomes. And one of those was a black professor at Yale named Richard Brooks, who called it a real and serious problem, but he also called on educators to be involved in finding the solutions. And I think that's part of what you were saying. you know, when you have a teacher like this who is making these kinds of comments, racial bias and grading comes to mind, and it calls into question her credibility as a professor, whether or not she can fully do that fairly. Also, you know, socioeconomic situations that might put certain minority students at a disadvantage, and we know that the debt balance, the debt, it affects minority students differently than it affects white students. And also there's the issue of social capital and minority students not having role models in their lives who can walk them through some of the challenges of law school and show them what the image of a successful lawyer or someone who works in a legal profession looks like. So I think it's just a way of like oversimplifying, which is what people like her provocateurs on the far right love to do. Someone online compared her to an Ann Coulter, which of the academic world, which I think was pretty appropriate.
Yeah, later on in the interview, she does go through like the kinds of situations in schools that she would endorse, and she endorses one thing that gets closer to like, you know, changing outcomes to make people more equal, and it's no excuses schools. Which is like
I wouldn't do well there.
Well, it's no excuses, and it's the kind of schools. And I've just been reading up on this, and I haven't been to any of these schools. So but I did find an op-ed from someone at the education school at the University of Pennsylvania that said there is no excuse for no excuses schools, and it's the kind of schools where like kids have a lanyard around their neck with a card on it, so that teachers who think that those kids are acting poorly can go up and just write a demerit on your card. It says that from the time the kids wake up to the time they go to sleep, their behavior is being judged. And the criticism from this person at the Education Institute or the Education Department at the University of Pennsylvania said it immediately treats kids at those schools as less than, as criminals,
as
someone who are, they're inmates. Yeah. They're inmates from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to sleep. And people like Amy Wax would say, well, it gives them a structure. And you just see everywhere she starts talking about it. That structure, she goes, structure because they're black, because they're Latino, because they won't, and she says this explicitly in the editorial that Cenk was talking about, they won't assimilate to American culture and their families are broken. These are assumptions that she makes, and something that the dean of students himself even brought up. If we go to graphic number 35, he said black students assigned to her class in their first week at Penn Law may reasonably wonder whether their professor has already come to a conclusion about their presence, performance, and potential for success in law school and thereafter. And if we go to the previous graphic 34. He said, I just want to clarify something. It is imperative for me as dean to state that these claims themselves, the statistics she seems to be citing, are false. Black students have graduated in the top of the class at Penn Law. And contrary to any suggestion otherwise, black students at Penn Law are extremely successful both inside and outside the classroom, in the job market, and in their careers.
Well, I want to say one other thing that's factual. Again, to Gina's point, if she just stated facts, well, then, and then had an interesting conversation around it. That's fruitful. That's productive. That's interesting, right? But she didn't even get her facts right. So when she said in that little snippet that we saw that that there is a diversity requirement for Penn Law Review, the dean came out and said, "No, there isn't. She just made that up." No, there's only the people who score at the top make it into the law review. So it's just not true.
She mentions also in that it's an hour long interview, which is fascinating. And you should watch it if you like, you know, masochism. Anyways, she goes into this prevalence of identity politics. And a lot of people have mentioned that in the recent election, identity politics is like a hot button issue. But she thinks that identity politics fetishizes resources. And when it comes down to it, the people who are talking about the identity politics she's mentioning, they're just identifying problems. She doesn't want to identify the actual problems and the causes and how to fix them. She just always seems to funnel things back into this, like, don't ask what we can do to help you help yourself ethos that just is bastardized in so many ways by white supremacists everywhere.
Do you believe, just to sort of keep this like super accountable, and as Ben has called me before, willfully obtuse, which I appreciate it. I love him. Do you believe she's a white supremacist?
Yeah, I mean, by the definition of it, I believe she's a white supremacist. It just
because immigrant. I mean, it's been in the news many times. Immigrants do go to Germany. They do go to Denmark.
Well, listen,
they do go to,
there's academics. Like that's an academic thing, and I know academics, teachers, professors who've been doing it for 50 years, who are like, well, here are the statistics, and some of them just leave them as statistics. The others just pull everything toward this theory they've been working on for 40 years, this book they've been writing for 40 years, and that's the lens through which they've been taught to see everything. And it's at work in the previous story we talked about. Like people in Arkansas pull it toward the lens where they typically see things, and it's a shame in academics because in academics you're supposed to be looking at the facts,
right?
And letting that drive the discussion.
So I want to make a couple points about what Gina said, because it's an interesting point. So she's like, oh, well, people are going to white European countries like immigration. But that's an economic issue. So for example, there's a lot of immigrants that come to Turkey. I use Turkey as an example from time to time because I'm a Turkish American.
What do you
so
know about?
Right.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. there's immigrants from the Middle East and the immigrants from Central Asia. Do they come because they think Turks are the superior race? They really know what they're doing, right? I'm sure Turks think that, but that's not why they come, because Turkey is slightly better off economically than the countries they came from, and they could make it to Turkey, and they're like, okay, great. And that's why they come. It doesn't have to do with race, etc. And so, now look, you go real back in the history as to why the European countries are better off economically, and so is Japan, for example. It's partly because of the raiding culture. They raided the Southern Hemisphere, took a lot of the money. Again, not related to race, so did Japan, right? And so did the Mongols. They were known for raiding. And for the moment being, the Mongols were incredibly rich when they took over all those areas, et cetera. And so that is part of why people immigrate to there. Is she a white supremacist? Look, the terms, like, conservatives make us call them racist from time to time by being so goddamn racist. Like, I don't wanna, those are loaded terms. And white supremacists, I know a lot of people get turned off. They hear that word and they wanna run for the hills. But in her case, she literally said, we're superior. Now, you could say, hey, you know what? She didn't mean white people, she just meant rich people. But I don't know that makes it that much better. In some ways, it might make it worse. Because she just has disdain for anyone who isn't already wealthy. And it's just sickening. So when she looks at a white kid from the hollows of West Virginia, and she thinks, yeah, I'm superior. Right?
Those terms are tough just because they are so loaded right now. So I don't know that I'm going to go there, but I am going to say that her credibility is absolutely called into question at this point. If you're a black student in her class, how can you trust that she is going to treat you fairly? So I think the university actually handled it pretty well, and I think that they did what they should have done. I don't know that she should be banned from campus for, you know, sharing these very controversial views, because I think that plays into the playbook that these people on the far right want. That's exactly what they want.
Yeah, and beyond that, she's tenured, and tenured is tenured, and we got to stick with that for important reasons. But last thing to challenge her facts and her view of the world, has anyone ever tracked how heritage? Not heritage, legacy students do in these colleges, because they're filled to the rim with legacy students.
Exactly.
Legacy students are, their parents went to that school. So I think I read a study recently, now 40% of Harvard students are legacy students. So that is actually the biggest affirmative action there is. And the reason they do it is for money. If you've, the biggest indicator whether you will donate to a school is if two generations of your family have gone to that school. So it's all about financial motivations. I bet I would be really surprised if you tracked legacy students if they didn't way underperform, because they didn't earn their way into that school like the other 60% of Harvard. So, but nobody ever tracks that, because the assumption is rich people are great, poor people have something wrong with their culture.
We gotta take a break.
Yes, we do. Okay, when we come back, a really interesting story. There's a bunch of interesting stories. There's the bridge collapse, etc. Yeah. But I actually love the Katy Perry story. I think that makes for
Jake
fascinating.
Say that every day. I love the Katy Perry story.
No. Yes, but I do today because it's filled with controversy and interesting issues. All right, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Simone, Gina, and Brent with you guys. tweets. Stalkington writes in, or no, Stalking Lion writes in, I don't care if you're tenured, you have racist opinions, you should lose your job. As an educator, that woman makes me physically ill. Okay. Riley Grady, on the other hand, says, I'm from rural Montana and had extremely conservative teachers. Luckily for me, they were good at their jobs and made me defend my ideals. So that's lovely to hear. And for it's not quite an on the other hand from Stalking Lion, but it's a different point of view. For a more perfect America, writes in, with a less subtle point, hey lady, what the F are you smoking? Mismatch hypothesis, my ass. Ooh. So if you don't know, mismatch hypothesis is we should match the students to the schools where they will do better. In other words, do black kids really have to go to Harvard? Can't they just go to a lower school where they'll do better? I'm being a bit of a dick about that, but relatively. But nobody ever says like mismatch hypothesis for legacy students, right? Like, is that really rich student really going to do well at Dartmouth, or should they go to a community college?
Right. Yeah, it's just keep it the same way. In the interview, she also says like, when they say the word segregation, she's like, I'm not for segregation.
Come on.
Do you hear yourself?
Can we also just look at our priorities as a nation? We spend more on our prisons than we do on our public schools. So I think that.
Yeah, but we're just fetishizing resources.
That's exactly.
But that's because she's a very stable genius. Oh, am I plugging this t-shirt that you could find on shoptyt.com? I hadn't noticed. Okay, best-selling shirt we got. Kofefe is pretty good too. A lot of the shirts are great, but check it out at shoptyt.com. And of course, everybody become a member at tytnetwork.com/join. And if you do, for example, the Bernie Town Hall, all the members get to watch that whenever they want, which is kind of neat. And I forgot to mention, Elizabeth Warren's also at the Town Hall, and so is Michael Moore and Anna Kasparian. I think that's the four horsemen of the progressive left in America.
Yeah, it's amazing. Four Horsemen's a little end of the worldy. It's trying to be like the epicalypse or like, I don't know, the apocalypse.
The Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four.
That's much better.
Yes. Way less deathy.
Okay, all right.
All right, so a bit of a change of gears here. You may have seen news of the bridge collapse at Florida International University. They were building a bridge. It was 950 tons. They called it an incident bridge. And while they were building it, it collapsed on traffic that was allowed to pass underneath it at the time. There's an ongoing investigation as to what went on. Marco Rubio trying to clarify, saying things like they were supposed to tighten the cables on it, and they ordered someone to tighten it, but before they could be tightened, this happened. But there is an ongoing investigation. One of the companies behind it made a statement in the wake of the event. It's called Bridge Engineers, and they released a statement to CBS saying, our deepest sympathies are with those affected by this accident. We will fully cooperate with every appropriate authority in reviewing what happened and why. In our 40-year history, nothing like this has ever happened before. Our entire team mourns the loss and injuries associated with this devastating tragedy, and our prayers go out to all involved. It looks like a pretty solid apology. There was that thing in the middle, though, saying that in our 40-year history of this family company, nothing like this has happened before. But news has surfaced of a previous incident, as reported by WTKR through a Virginia paper, saying construction of the South Norfolk Jordan Bridge back in 2012 was put on hold. It was designed by the same firm after a truss used to build the bridge shifted, which sent a 10-foot, 90-ton piece of concrete crashing down to the railroad tracks below in June 2012. Four workers were injured in the incident. As a result, the firm was fined officially $28,000. It's just weird that you would, you know, it's a family company, it's a small company, and then you wouldn't mention something that happened as recently as 2012.
And also, I thought I read that they put it up in like six hours. That there was plans not even to have this bridge ready until next year. So what's the rush and what's the payoff for, I mean, it's a footbridge, go around, who cares? Yeah. Why would they risk people's lives?
It's this new construction method called accelerated bridge construction, and it was developed.
I vote no. him alone, I vote
right?
No.
Right? It was actually developed in part at FIU, which is why I think they saw this as a publicity opportunity.
Sad. Oops.
And it was developed with a couple of other universities. But yeah, the whole idea is it goes up in like 6 hours as opposed to obstructing traffic for 24 to, you know, or not even like for 24 weeks or however long it takes to build a bridge.
We had the, in here when they built the bridge over the 405, it shut down traffic for like days, entire days at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm never defending anything that they do to enhance the 405 in any way. But because they did that, it didn't collapse and people didn't die.
Yeah. So that leads to the most important point, which is like it's we got to constantly defeat these right-wing mythologies. And so they say, regulation is always bad. It slows everything down. You got to deregulate. Well, it kind of depends, doesn't it? Right? So if there's overregulation, which is entirely possible, then yeah, you should deregulate a little bit. If Wall Street keeps crashing the economy, I'd step up the regulation rather than step it down, as an example. And in bridges, let's keep it up. Let's keep the regulations up, right? Because if bridges fall, then people die, and it's kind of a bad idea. Look, buildings used to collapse all the time back in the day. We didn't know how to build them to be earthquake resistant, for example, when earthquakes hit, right? Or we did know, but there was no regulations enforcing it, so it was cheaper to build a building without those required regulations
the
built in.
And, yeah.
Yes, that's right. Now, it does cost more to build a building in LA now, but guess what? In the middle of an earthquake, you're super psyched that they built it that way.
Right.
Because when a 90 ton slab of concrete falls in your head, it kind of hurts.
Yeah, it's terrible. And MCM, the other company that was involved in the actual construction, said that, or it was reported that they also had 11 violations since 2013 and had been fined $50,000 over that time. That was reported in Time Magazine through stats from OSHA.
You know, one last weird point I want to make on this story. So Wolfpack is an organization to get money out of politics. You hear me talk about it all the time. Wolf-pack.com/go. It's a donator volunteer.
Not all.
That's right. Get money out of politics. Anyway, but I'm super proud of the people in it. And there's a lot of veterans in the group because they think it makes sense. It's orderly. And it's fighting for freedom in a different way. There's a lot of teachers in the group because they find that it helps because they get frustrated with what happens in their school system and they want to know how to fix it. They logically figure out that it's money in politics. But there's also a lot of engineers. And I talked to a couple of engineers in a row a couple of years ago. I remember having these conversations with the volunteers, right? And I was like, what drew you to Wolfpack? He's like, and one of them made a great comment that I quote from time to time on the show. You can't half build a bridge, right? If you're an engineer, you have to get the bridge 100% right. Right, and so they think Wolfpack is logical, and it brings you all the way to an amendment, which actually solves the problem, which is very nice of them to say. But I was reminded of that reading this story. You can't even 99% build a bridge. You know, if you're an engineer, you got to get it 100% right. That's why regulations are important in cases like this.
Until it's done, don't let people drive underneath it.
Yeah.
Not to mention the bridges in America that we don't know where they are, but they've been rated as structurally unsafe unless infrastructure spending goes to fix them. Okay. Let's move on to Katy Perry.
Yes.
He kissed a girl. Did he like it? Do you know what I mean by those words? From the season of American Idol that no one asked for came a kiss that no one asked for. Katy Perry is one of the judges. She's on American Idol. This is a guy. Let's take a look at this gentleman. His name is Benjamin Glaze. He's 20 years old. He never kissed a girl in his life. Aww. Of course, the producers told that to Katy Perry, and she was like, have you ever kissed a girl? And he said, no. So she said, let's remedy that. And she offered what? Her cheek. He went up and kissed her on the cheek, and she was like, oh, that was great. Then she said, can you kiss the other cheek? And as he was going up to kiss the other cheek, what happened?
No.
Last second, damn. Turns her face.
Booyah.
Mouth to mouth, it was the kiss heard around the world, as evidenced by this next photo. It knocked him on his buns.
That's unbelievable. That's unreal.
In the wake of this, he said, would I have done it if she said, would you kiss me, according to this quote? No, I would have said no. I know a lot of guys would be like, heck yeah, but for me, I was raised in a conservative family and I was uncomfortable immediately. I wanted my first kiss to be special. He was sent home, by the way, because he did not perform well. According to him, his heartbeat was going so fast. But then he came back to qualify his statement saying, I do not think I was sexually harassed, because a lot of people came up and said, this is sexual harassment. It seemed from the previous quote that it was. And he said, I don't think I was sexually harassed by Katy Perry, and I'm thankful for the judges' comments and critiques. I was uncomfortable in a sense of how I have never been kissed before and was not expecting it.
Okay, I have enormous mixed feelings about this story.
Love it. Bring it.
I love this story.
Bring okay. it.
So, number one, there's something super endearing about the kid. You know, so I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm not a conservative. but he's a conservative kid, and he's 19, and he wanted his first kiss to be special. And for all the kids out there, don't sweat it. It's not going to be that special. Just move on, get the kiss, move forward.
Also, okay. It's not going to be with Katy Perry.
It will okay. not be.
And by the way, getting your first kiss from Katy Perry is pretty special.
It's pretty special.
Pretty neat. Yeah. I would have taken it. So he's cute. He fell down, you know, and he's like, oh, I want to be in a relationship. And before, I don't agree with him. I don't think you need to be in a relationship. I think you should get going and all that. But I'm awe to your point,
yeah.
Simone, right? Now, people are saying if you flipped it and Katy Perry was a guy of her age mm-hmm. and kissed a 19-year-old girl
yeah.
without permission, people
about
would have flipped out. And I don't know. I want to hear you guys out on that.
This is a pretty big gray area. I mean, I think you're right. If you flip the genders, I would be. I mean, I'm kind of uncomfortable with it right now. I don't know.
So there is a lot logically to sift through, and there's a lot of frameworks that have
right.
arisen in recent years about power dynamics and races or genders of traditional power and how that affects how you're supposed to interpret it. And I think it's twofold. So the flip it in reverse. There's a lot of things in this that I've covered on various shows where it's like,
yeah.
if you flip the races, and the response is, yeah, but one race has been traditionally in a position of power, and so that equivalency doesn't really work out. Whatever you feel about that, just know that that is a framework of discourse in America that's evolving. However, if you go back to the power dynamic in this situation, it is a host. There
yeah.
is a host there who is also Katy Perry, a judge in a position of extreme power, and she kissed him. I do think if you go to a more specific level, this guy has not had a kiss. He's 20 years old. He is in that position where it's like, yeah, she still has cooties. I didn't know what to do. I didn't like it. And he may have liked it. The dominant thing to pull out of it, in my opinion, is she shouldn't have done it. It seems super markety because the last two things, Grace pointed this out on Pop Trigger when we covered it, they're doing a lot of marketing about how Katy Perry is in love with various people.
Yeah, I think you're
weird
right.
Marketing too.
Well, but for as somebody anecdotally who's had one of my first kisses, like my third kiss, had to be in a rehearsal space in front of my mom in a play, and they really wanted me to go for it. So I get that this kid was like super uncomfortable, and just because he's a boy, who cares? It's still sad. But the thing I couldn't stop thinking about was, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume this wasn't Katy Perry's idea. She has producers in her ear. They're trying to make people watch the show. They're trying to create controversy because nobody gives a crap about this show anymore. And they're like, we're sending this kid in. Here's how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
Do your thing. So at that point, it's like, she could say, I'm Katy Perry. I don't have to do anything. Or she's like, I want to be a team player. All right, let's just get this done. So I always think, who's in her ear and who's putting the pressure on her to do something, whether she wants to do it or not?
She seemed more than team player, though. She seemed pretty into the idea.
Yeah. Well, you guys have swung me a little bit. Look, my inclination is to scream, let her go! Let
yeah.
her go! It's all in good fun. And, dude, you'll be all right. You'll be all right.
He will be.
Okay, but at the same time, when you take into account what Brett said about she's about the judgment. I mean, you want to talk about a power dynamic. She's incredibly rich and famous, etc. So we can't say that about the Weinsteins of the world. And it's not comparable. Weinstein did horrible, horrible, horrible right. things. But still, I mean, that's a power dynamic. This is a power dynamic. And then Gina's point about, and Brett said it too, the producers, these are highly produced TV shows. Then it becomes, you know, doing it for the purpose of manipulation, right? And for the purpose of ratings and all that stuff. And if we said, okay, let's take a 19-year-old virgin girl,
right.
and for ratings,
oh,
let's have an older man just kiss her without permission, and then we'll call that guy Donald Trump, right? If it had happened on Apprentice, we'd be talking about it as a political issue.
Yeah, and
right?
If they wanted to go full Weinstein, they would bring a fern out there with a guitar, and he would violate
that. Yeah.
Well, also, okay, I'm sure this kid is like kind of riding the high of this moment of, you know, being kissed by Katy Perry, and I don't think he's going to be emotionally scarred by this, but sexual harassment for a lot of people is something that takes a while, maybe even years, to understand that you were made uncomfortable by it, that it was an uncomfortable moment for you. So he says that he doesn't think it's sexual harassment now, and that's fine. I think we should take him at his word.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How's he going to feel in like 5 years? How's
he going to feel in 10 years? I'll probably realize that he should have kissed people much earlier and was psyched that it happened with Katy Perry.
I don't know. I'm just posing.
But now you split me to the opposite direction because, and back to where I wanted to go. He said it wasn't sexual harassment. I'm going to take him at his word. Not guilty.
Not guilty.
Do you want to bring him come back and talk about?
Yeah, we got it. We got to go. We got it. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Back on the Young Turks, I believe Gina has a wrinkle on this Katy Perry story.
Excuse me, I'm just going to don my tinfoil hat that I just made for my tinfoil hat crazy person theory corner. Quickly, nobody should be sexually assaulted. They certainly shouldn't do it on national television, and that's a horrible thing. But I now believe that this goes all the way to the top. They told Katy Perry to give him a good show, and they pulled this kid aside and said, look, we're going to play up the virgin thing. I want you to resist. I want you to, we're going to make this a big deal. And I am not telling anybody that you know, I'm not saying I don't believe him, but I'm just saying as a theory, all the way to the top.
Okay, so that he was in on it.
Yeah,
that kid's not even a virgin.
Producers, I don't think they let them do anything on their own, but that's possible. All right, I'm taking my hat off.
All right, everybody check out Simone on KTLA 5 in LA, but also on Mike.com anywhere. Adam Carolla's show for Gina, and Brett's right here. All right, bye-bye.